Hello and welcome to Movies and Tea. I'm your host Zoe, Zoe Jones, and joining me of course is my co-host, Miss Kim Lowe.
Hello.
Tonight's After Hours special, we go back to the Resident Evil franchise. If you remember way, way, way back in season one, we covered every single Resident Evil movie. And now we're back doing it exactly the same thing with the animated Resident Evil movies. And tonight we check out all three of the Resident Evil movies, plus the Resident Evil animated TV series Infinite Darkness as well. But Kim, I mean, when these movies came out, did you actually watch them when they first came out, or is it like myself where you just spent the last week watching them?
Well, I watched Infinite Darkness when it was released, so that one I watched on release, but like all the other ones I didn't. But I think thinking back, if you look at the timeline of the settings of the movies itself, like the animated films, to the games, obviously, I'm sure you're familiar with the games since, you know, we're both gamers. And it actually makes sense to watch Infinite Darkness first because it kind of rewinds back to the beginning. It kind of slots itself ahead of all the animated movies.
I lost track of where things were supposed to fit after a while. Because there were certain films where I thought, oh, this goes between like 4 and 5, or this goes before 6, and that was like completely wrong according to Wikipedia. So it's I have a rough idea of where things sort of fitted in within the time scale. So when it came to Infinite Darkness, I wasn't exactly sure where that one was supposed to fit, but
Infinite Darkness slots in after Resident Evil 2 and before Resident Evil 4. Because obviously, like, Leon and Claire aren't in RE3, I believe, in the game.
I think it actually takes place after 4 because he rescues the president's daughter in 4, so...
Yes. I've seen multiple, like, Infinite Darkness is the one that's the most, like, random, because they're kind of, like, some people talk about it being after 4, and then some people say it's after 2, so I'm not really sure, because I've watched people play the game, but I haven't really, like, basically after 2, I'm a little bit fuzzy on what happens.
Yeah.
Luckily, like, recently, one of my friends played all the games for Halloween on stream, so...
All right, nice.
So his marathon really helped with this whole thing on, like, how to slot things in, so...
Yeah, I mean, Resident Evil 2 is sort of, like, the last real sort of traditional sort of survival horror game. I mean, after that, you obviously had Nemesis, which felt like kind of a bolt-on to Resident Evil 2. Then you had Code Veronica, which was... on the Dreamcast, and you got to play as Claire and had a stupidly ridiculous hard boss at the end. And then we were into Resident Evil 4, which was kind of like more of an action slant, which continued into Resident Evil 5. Then 6 was just a myriad of styles of game, and then 7 saw the first of the first person shooter games with which has continued obviously into Resident Evil 7 with Village. So
Resident Evil 8, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That as well. So, as I said, then in between that, you've got all the other weird ones. You've got, like, Dark Side Conspiracy and all those weird little subplot ones, which were, like, meant to be played online, but they never actually finished the online capabilities for it, so... But, of course, that doesn't really apply to any of this at all, because we're here to talk about these movies, which obviously kicked off in 2008 with Degeneration, a film when it came out I know a lot of people were kind of excited about, because obviously it was in the Resident Evil games. It was something new, something fresh, and had the look of the games. And what we essentially get here is a film that's set between Resident Evil 4 and 5. And it's actually canon to the games as well, which is also kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Paul Dorris Anderson's going off making his own version of the Resident Evil games, introducing, like, Alice and doing that whole world, which was just doing its whole thing. So it was kind of weird going back and watching Degeneration and not seeing Alice, because she's now worked her way into my mind that she's such an integral part of this universe, even though she's not in any of the games.
Well, yeah, I mean, but But I mean, like, that's the main thing, right, of why gamers are really not a big fan of Paul W.S. Anderson's version of Resident Evil. Because, you know, you inject a character, then you play up, you use, like, other characters from the games, and then you try to mesh that into some type of storyline. I personally don't have a problem with it. I think the movies are fun. I mean, I think when we talked about the whole Resident Evil live action franchise, I've already expressed that. But I mean, I would, you know, seeing as, you know, we're having this whole wave of video game adaptations recently, it would be nice to see, you know, Resident Evil, which obviously is happening, is going to be remade and, you know, done into some other, like, well, it's already been released, right?
So yeah, welcome to Raccoon City's out there. Yeah,
exactly. So that one is much more with the games than before, even if, you know, people comment a lot about, you know, their choice of actors and whether they fit in the roles and blah, 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 you know?
I think this was the problem, really, when it came to the movies, is that Paul W.S. Anderson was sort of doing his own thing, and it became more his own thing the further that series went along. I think it was after Apocalypse that he sort of just went into that whole post-apocalyptic world, and we had the Alice clones and all the other weird and wonderful things, as he sort of took his favourite bits from the games and just sort of went his own direction. And then you have Welcome to Raccoon City, which is a new one, which obviously seems to be more closer to the games. And it's so weird when you look at these characters, because they're very clearly, like, styled directly out of the video games, which is just weird, because what works in video game world doesn't exactly work in the real world. So, and we also have Netflix live action TV series on the way as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure we'll be covering those at one point in the future, seeing as, you know, Resident Evil is a big project here.
It is. But with this one, I mean, it was directed by Makoto Kimiya, who is best known really for doing visual effects. He's a visual effects supervisor for series like Bleach, Alice in Borderland, Kingdom. He's done a whole bunch of series, and this was sort of like his first real venture into directing. He actually directed this film and the second film. And the problem I have with this one is that it's too attached to the video game world, so they've sort of like approached it like they're doing video game cutscenes. As we have this this outing where Leon and Claire are reunited at this airport outbreak, we've got, at the same time, we've got a shady government official who's running his own tests with bioweapons, and we have a survivor of the Raccoon City disaster who's plotting his revenge on the company. But what we essentially get here is like what feels like a bunch of extended cutscenes, then some interesting action, and quite a few shots where it feels like they're going to hand the controller over to you, but they obviously don't.
I know. I don't know. I mean, I think Degeneration is pretty good in the sense that you do have a, you know, we talked about, like, one of the things that bothered me a little was that, you know, obviously we watched this on Netflix, and oddly, they didn't have the English dub version, which I thought was a little bit odd.
It is. Even as, like, the original Japanese title, so it's Biohazard, not Resident Evil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, the movie itself is pretty good overall, in the sense that, like, I think that one of the winning points, I think, as a contrast to the live-action movies, is the fact that it is so attached to the video games. And you really have that experience, whether you're moving from, you know, the airport scene and everything, or like, as you move on and you kind of see that whole, you know, the whole plot thicken and that sort of thing. Yeah. And you have a little bit of twists and turns here, and you're starting to get introduced to, I think, you know, the different virus strains that they're having now. And obviously that gets explored a lot more when we go, you know, further down into the animated films. But, you know, you get still, I think a lot of people really like this because obviously you have this Leon and Claire reuniting. And as much as, you know, they don't really have a romantic line, like relationship line type of thing. No. But they are, you know, fan favorites, obviously. So it's nice to see them kind of working together or in some form. You know, they always end up having separate storylines anyways, achieving their own thing, right? So I think it's a pretty competent animated film overall. The bad guy is obviously very bad. And then you always have a subplot of, you know, oh, you know, this is just, you know, smokes and mirrors. He's not really the bad guy. The actual bad guy is this one, you know?
Yeah, we have Curtis, who's somehow manages to break into this top secure lab. This lab which has got all these secure devices, but he's just some guy off the street can apparently just break in and steal the T-virus and turn himself into a tyrant.
Well, no, I mean, to be fair, Curtis was part of Will Pharma before he got kicked out.
Right.
So he actually existed in it, but he got kicked out, and how he was able to go back in, well, that's obviously, you know, the plot is surrounding that as well.
So. Yeah, and at the same time, we obviously, yes, we get to see Claire return, and it's really frustrating the fact that we know Claire is able to look after herself, because, I mean, she's obviously a playable character in, like, in Resident Evil, like, 2 and Code Veronica. And so she's able to hold her own, but in this, she's just basically reduced to the damsel in distress. And the only way they justify it is by they're saying, like, Leon's like, oh, I'm a fighter, and you're there to help people. Maybe our two worlds can collide, and it's all like, God, it's so annoying. And especially because Leon's just such a personality void in this one.
Yeah.
So you're basically watching what often feels like an extended cutscene. And it's not to say there aren't enjoyable moments, like some of the action set pieces, especially the airport sequence.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic when we have the airport breakout and at the same time there's zombies on a plane that crashes into the airport, and it's like, and they start like spilling out, which just reminded me of Nightmare City, which has a similar scene. And I thought that was really cool. It's like something we obviously can't do in the film version, but we can obviously do in an animated feature. But after that sort of opening half, we end getting some dragging plot till we're waiting to the next big scene, which is basically when Curtis turns into a tyrant and starts killing everyone in the lab, and it just turns into this prolonged fight sequence where they're trying to blow up the lab, which is self-cleansing, and at the same time defeat Curtis, who's this big hulking, basically like zombie Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, when you dial it down, like, people like to talk a lot about Resident Evil and how empty, you know, a lot of the live action is. And in reality, when you think about it, video game adaptation really is what you build of it. And if you look at, like, as we go through the four, you know, segments, basically the plot line is very similar. The plot points are pretty similar. It's just really how it's approached and the different characters involved type of thing, or in a different setting, obviously. But yeah, I mean, you always get that hulking change and that sort of thing, which is a plot point that's very similar in Infinite Darkness. Yeah, so
why the big eye in the arm? That's what I never understood. It's so like you're creating this bioweapon, but you're going to have a big eye like Nightmare from Soul Calibur in the arm. And it's so like, why the big eye, guys? It just never made any sense. And it's not, and you get like, hit the cat, because it's sort of like tyrant vision. And it just seems like it's worse than it was before. So I just didn't understand what was going on there. But yeah, I mean, it has its moments, but certainly I was sort of like done after one viewing with this one. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was really just like a lot of in between, right? Trying to build up to those big scenes.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I guess in some ways it's okay. Like I don't know. I don't know. Like, I mean, if we were, I don't know how I, you know, to be fair, I I've been thinking about it for a while after watching the four movies, and probably we could discuss it on which one you think is the best out of the films, because I still haven't been able to really pinpoint which I like the best.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, for myself, they get better as they go on, which is a real positive, because when I started this, because I talked you into doing this random ass project came, and they were sort of like, I sat down to watch the first one and I was like, oh my god, I've just made Kim sit through four of these. In that all this quality, she's really not going to talk to me. And it's sort of like, it's fine to subject yourself to this, but to subject someone else to this as well, it's like a whole different thing. So
yeah, but you forget that I'm a much more forgiving viewer than most people, so that's why I find it. No, I agree that it does get better as it goes, but I have been like looking up what other people think about these films, and I think the general consensus is that the characters actually feel more empty as you go forward, and I'm like, I don't know, I don't really feel that way, you know, like a lot of people. I remembered because, you know, I obviously did Infinite Darkness when it first released, and I remembered a lot of people complaining about it being bad and stuff, and I was like, I don't know, I really liked it. I had a lot of fun with it, you know? So, yeah, anyways, we might as well move on so that we can eventually talk about Infinite Darkness.
I know. That's basically what we all want to talk about, is Infinite Darkness. But next up from 2012 was Resident Evil Damnation. The switch and numbering in our system. I hate the fact that none of these have numbers. It's not like Resident Evil 1. It's just all like Resident Evil Damnation or Regeneration. It's just these generic titles. And there's no... The only way to sort of like number them at all is just basically go off the year of the release. So,
yes.
But apparently this takes place prior to Resident Evil 6. The reason we know this is because we get a whole bunch of clips of Resident Evil 6 in the end credits.
Yes.
Which came out a couple of days before this one was released. So if you're playing this and going, or you really want to play a Resident Evil game, it really is the hard sell for Resident Evil 6 at the end of this one. So, but as I said before, this saw director Makoto Kimiara returning to the director's chair after helming that first film, and thankfully learned from his mistakes. So we have something that resembles more of a film and just not an extended cutscene. At the same time, he brings on Shotaro Suga, who is a scriptwriter. He does a lot of anime, and this was sort of like one of his rare departures from doing anime series, because he did things like Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex and Blood Plus. So for him to come aboard and do a Resident Evil film was a real bonus for this film, because we actually have a proper script, it feels like, with this one. With Leon, once again, your favourite character from the first film, is back in this one. And this time he's heading to the Eastern Europe, at least the movie version of Eastern Europe, where he's in this country which is involved in a civil war, and at the same time there's rumours of bioweapons being used, which he's investigating, only to discover that the president of this country is secretly brought back La Plaga, which was the virus from Resident Evil 4, and now launching their own bioweapons program. At the same time, one of the rebel leaders has got his dominant version of La Plaga, which means he's able to control the more minor zombie characters, in particular Lickers, leading some really interesting action sequences, to say the least. But what did you think of this one? I mean, obviously we're moving away from America, where this time we're moving to the Eastern Slav Republic, which I guess is supposed to be the post-Soviet Russia.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they do talk about Russia, so it's kind of like, you know,
real subtle, guys.
Yeah, I like Damnation more. In a sense, I think the characters, they start, you know, building a little bit more on the character, whether it's Leon or whatnot. Even the character surrounding him has a little bit more, you know, like when they get sacrificed, you kind of feel bad type of thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can really see that kind of camaraderie that comes out, even though, you know, Leon is essentially taken hostage by these guys, but he ends up, you know, turning it around and trying to help them get out of this, because obviously they kind of know what they're in for, but not exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he teams up with Buddy, who's this former teacher turned revolutionary leader. There's also this young revolutionary soldier called JD, who's obsessed with America, which leads to some of the most cringeworthy dialogue of the film. As he talks about cheeseburgers and American movies, and just like, it's just like the most generic dialogue that they could come up with. Big plus for this one, though, is that we get the appearance of Ada Wong, one of the greatest characters in the Resident Evil franchise.
Well, I mean, Ada Wong showing up makes sense in the sense that, you know, like, we all know after Resident Evil 2 that, you know, obviously he and Ada has this whole romantic line that's kind of like, you know, they're kind of like enemies, but no, you know, type of thing. And
yeah.
It is a good lead up to Resident Evil 6 because obviously Resident Evil 6 has, you know, Leon and Ada and, you know, a bunch of storylines and a bunch of characters to play and that sort of stuff.
All your favorites.
So it really like kind of brings you into the game in itself where you can really see that parallel as to how, you know, this would lead into the next thing type of thing. Obviously here we're talking about a different strain because, you know, at this point in Resident Evil, the games have gone on for, you know, many years more than the movies and there's like a billion strains. So the last movie we talked about the G virus and this one's about the T virus. So you know, you're really getting into the world itself where the government is getting involved all the time, obviously, because every single government wants to use this in some way to make themselves stronger. So you have that whole element to it too.
Still not as worse an endgame as the actual films came up with. Well, we basically nuke the world, and this is going to be our plan for taking it over. We end up with a cruddy world that we're in charge of, which I still don't get why they chose that as the end game, but that's beside the point. But yes, we have President Svetlana, who I have to say, in like typical, if you read like any sort of like those like Clive Cussler style action novels, I have to say she's a rather capable president.
Yes.
Who not only is the leader of this post-Soviet world in Eastern Europe, but is apparently also a rather capable fighter. She has a big showdown with Ada Wong, which,
yeah.
I mean, Ada Wong is essentially the Catwoman of this world. She plays both sides. She's got a very sort of dubious moral compass. She also has a grapple gun that we get to use as she replicates a scene from Resident Evil 4 where she basically turns up and then uses her Batman grapple to just disappear only for Leon to go women after she taunts him about their previous romantic dalliance.
Yeah,
but you know, that's Ada. At least she's not wearing her red dress to go zombie hunting.
Which, most of the time she's not, you know. It's only that Resident Evil 2 where she was like that.
2 and 4 she's in the red dress and high heels with the Resident Evil 4 in particular, she's got like the Tommy gun because they wanted to base her off La Femme Nikita.
Right.
The Luc Besson movie.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Like, and I would like question it, but at the same time in Relic, the head scientist, she goes monster hunting in a little black dress, so I guess it's perfectly capable. And back when we did the commentary for Jurassic World, we questioned about Claire going dino hunting in high heels. So,
yeah, but you know, like I always think Ada's pretty fun as a character because you always know like her plot line is always double crossing. So you're just wondering when this double cross is going to happen and, you know, like, what her side is. Because I remembered at the end of one of the games, you kind of got an idea that she was actually fighting for the other side. And that's kind of like, you know, you never really know where she stands. Like, is she with, you know, BSAA or is she with, you know, Tricell or whatever, you know, like a bunch of the different stuff that goes on and all these things. So, I don't know. I mean, I actually think Ada and Leon in a movie is pretty fun, even if it has some cheesy dialogue. I can't help but kind of chuckle a little when he goes, women, you know, like.
I know what you mean, and at least this time they've also corrected his personality. So, he's got a real, he actually has a personality now. He's not just a grump who's there just to do action scenes, and I think it helps that the fact they brought over the voice cast from the games,
right,
for both Ada and Leon, so that really, really helps as well, because it's some great voice acting that we have here for them, and At the same time, the fact that Buddy has his ability to control the liquors means that we get sort of zombie on zombie action, because at the end we get a bunch of tyrants turn up and we get to see them fight a bunch of liquors. And at this point in the big finale, it's just basically where the film just goes into this like Michael Bay sort of extravagance and just like throws everything but the kitchen sink at the screen, and it's all like, we got these big tyrants, and we have huge explosions. We're going to drive a truck over them. We're going to shoot them in point-blank range with a tank. All these sort of like really fun elements that sort of come into play. And the tyrants are a really great big boss to have in this film. And I think it really worked perfectly with this film, because it sort of builds up nicely with that big sort of finale at the end with the tyrants. And I think it just all came together. There was just, this film was such a step up. It felt like it had a good, had an actual plot, you know, actual storyline, characters, and some decent action to boot. So whereas the first one I gave 3 stars, this one I booted it up to 3.5.
No, that Damnation definitely, like, I think it paced it better. You weren't just looking at these, like, you know, whoa, wow, big set pieces, right? You had these, like, moments that built up. So, you know, you had that whole underground thing, and you know how they're being looked for, and then you kind of go to the church scene, and then that kind of builds up again, because now you're seeing the citizens are actually being affected by this type of Las Plagas type of thing, and the people around, that they actually have some type of, you know, they have a bit of smartness to them, right? Sorry. And so you have that moment where you kind of start building up and you start seeing these, you know, zombies that aren't, you know, they're not just mutants. They know how to, you know, they can still kind of have a conscience to them. Like, they know what they're doing. And that kind of makes them a lot more freaky. So as you go up, you know, the plot thickens with the government. At the same time, the plot thickens down here, and then they kind of eventually converge, which is what most Resident Evil movies do anyways. So and then you also have this, I think, this whole thing about Leon and Buddy's backstory with and JD. I really like the dynamic between them, because you really see this kind of camaraderie that builds between them. So it makes their characters a little bit more, you know, worth fighting for. Even when you get to the end, like, you start, you know, you start seeing this whole thing, and this, you know, like, how and the whole thing with Buddy, and then they kind of address it at the end. And I really do like this one a lot more than the, you know, I feel like it's more complete.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got anything else that you want to...
No.
Okay, so that then takes us on to our next outing, which came in 2017 with Resident Evil Vendetta. This time the was directed by Takanori Tsujimoto. This time, though, we get to see Chris Redfield return finally, which is always exciting to see, because he was obviously one of our main leads in the first game, and then he disappeared until Resident Evil 5, when he finally came back. And you're like, good to see you again, Chris. You charismatic bastard, you. But yes, basically, this time it's a weapons merchant who has decided to take revenge on the government for bombing his wedding. By basically getting hold of bioweapons, and he now plans to release the virus in New York. And it's up to Chris Redfield to team up with Leon again, who's spent the last film getting himself stupidly drunk in Europe, to take down this weapons merchant. Again, these films are just getting better as they get on. This was, again, another sort of step up. I know people on Letterboxd hate it, looking at the reviews here.
But I don't know. I think that Vendetta does something right, in the sense that right now we're talking about these two dudes, right? And it picks up right after the game where, you know, Resident Evil 6, obviously Chris and Leon have their, you know, issues because of this whole trusting Ada and helping Ada from the game itself, and, you know, siding with with the villain type of thing.
Yeah.
So they have, you know, they have beef with each other. They're not exactly trusting of each other either. But the film also brings back Rebecca, which I believe was in...
She was in the original... She was in the original Resident Evil. Yeah. Where she was... She was a supporting character. And over the games, such as, like, Umbrella Chronicles, they've sort of expanded out her story, so she's become much more... Because originally she's sort of like the rookie agent in the STARS team. And then along the way she's become a doctor, so she investigates bioterrorism.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, adding Rebecca Chambers to this whole equation is pretty nice as well, because now you have this character who, you know, she's not just some... You know, she's not exactly useful, but she's not exactly disposable either, in the sense that, you know, she gives you a lot of understanding on this whole situation that's going on, and having found, you know, some type of cure or whatnot. So she kind of brings the storyline together in the sense that, you know, like, you start off with her, and then you go into this whole this other scientist who has now created some other isn't it some morph of some other virus, the A virus, and that's even more advanced than the last one that they had.
We obviously have this time it's interesting really, because this is a brand new villain that we have, obviously, in Aris, who's a weapons dealer who is now dealing in bioweapons. And we have this really great opening scene where Chris Redfield's team are going in to basically do an arrest at the mansion. So we get real flashbacks to Resident Evil 1 there. And we find it's like full of these creepy-ass zombies, including the creepy zombie child with his remote control car. We find out that Chris's girlfriend has been turned into a zombie as well, and the whole time basically they've just been lured into this trap that Aris has set, and lays the groundwork for what's going to be sort of like his big attack on New York, which he obviously has to recruit Leon to get for additional support in this one. But no, I mean, this one's really interesting, not only in what it obviously does with in terms of like zombie viruses here, because we obviously have Aris, who's like, as I said, he's this charismatic arms dealer who's got a real sort of comic book villainous sort of side to him. The fact he's going to release all this virus in the city by the use of these petrol tankers. He's got a big tyrant monster, which has got a metal mask, which I believe was like his friend who he turned into this tyrant, and his he's also got his sister as well, who struts around in PVC for no apparent reason. I mean, obviously it was great to see Rebecca return to the franchise. So it's sort of like one of those characters you forget was in the game, because last time we obviously saw was like way back in like Resident Evil 1. So.
Mm-hmm.
To see her now as the doctor. I thought she was the small child in Resident Evil 2. So it's only when I like looked it back up, it was like, oh no, she was there right from the beginning. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this one. I mean, again, they've got a really decent script. These are really interesting characters, especially when you look at the character of Aris, who's not just your sort of typical video game villain. He's got more backstory. He's got more of a movie villain. He's got a backstory. I mean, the fact that his whole thing is the fact that he wants to take revenge on the US because they basically blew him up at his wedding. And then we have the great scene where he's like the one of the sole survivors of this wedding, and he's there holding his bride's hand, and it's just a hand, which we later find out he's been keeping alive as a zombie hand that he plans to graft onto Rebecca, which is also really creepy as well. The fact that he becomes obsessed with Rebecca because she looks like his ex-wife. And it's not enough just for him to kidnap her. No, he wants to graft his dead wife's hand onto her arm. And he also has her change into a wedding dress, which was just all kinds of creepy. The fact he, like, drugs a woman, and then next thing she wakes up in this wedding dress. Leon and Leon and Chris are doing their best Just Cause impressions here, because again, all plausibility is just out the window. We have the scene of Leon riding through the streets of New York on this motorcycle that he's soon riding upstairs. It goes off in like this whole John Woo style of action. So we get this really great showdown between Chris and Aris, which has some really great gung fu in them. We get to see Leon drive with the scene on his motorcycle being chased by Lickers, which is just stupidly over the top. And we get a fair amount of Harbo on display. So yeah, if you like Just Cause, this one will really do it for you, because it's the same sort of level of plausibility. And at the same time, the action scenes are just really fun in this one. I had just a lot of fun with this one. And I was very surprised after the previous two that this again was just a real big step up in the action. They just seem to be getting better as these go on. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, like, the Vendetta itself, you know, obviously I think that the story, the subtitle here of the movie itself actually makes sense because there is a vendetta at hand. But at the same time, you know, like, I think that Leon and Chris, I think it's nice to always see them in games, and the fact that they get these wonder, like, I really like the scenes they have together, especially like when they're in the hallway doing that big fight scene with the zombies, and
yeah,
it's really appealing to see this whole thing. Obviously you have like stupidities like the Arius who falls down from, you know, the elevator shaft and he's still able to talk.
Yeah, that was really bizarre. It's sort of like he
splats blood when he hits the ground, and all of a sudden he's still able to communicate with this hulking beast, which is like, oh, this is the, it's like, yeah, trigger your final form type of thing, you know?
It was really, really stupid, that was. It was more stupid than, like, when he falls off the satellite in GoldenEye and he's somehow still alive, just so we can drop a satellite on him. It's sort of like, it was really stupid. And yeah, and then at the end it just goes, oh my god, it just reminded me so much of The Cat, where it turns into the giant phlegm monster at the end of that movie, and it just sort of like, when he comes up and is this Hugh Cronenberg-esque form, I was like, oh, this seems familiar. But yeah, it was really stupid, the fact that the he bonds with his giant tyrant monster to create this new form.
But that's the thing, right? There's always some type of big monster, some type of big form type of thing.
I suppose you're right. I mean, they were like, we've not really made the most of having the big monster here, and we seemingly kill our tyrant character really easily, and then obviously he comes back to bond with Aris. So
all that said, I still think like the plot itself is still pretty pretty solid, in the sense that it does have a decent flow to it.
Yeah,
and I think that this one actually has the smoother kind of transition from one set to the next. It's not really like, you know forcibly just very disjointed, but this one really flows in the sense of one scene to the next, so how Rebecca is taken, and you know what's happening, you know what happened at the lab, and how they all reunite in one place as they do this rescue mission, and all these things kind of culminate together, and you end up, you know, seeing like, oh, why they would bring in Leon, and you don't need to know. It also helps that you don't really need to know the games really well in order to kind of translate the stuff, but it helps if you do, because, well, then you'd understand why Leon and, you know, Leon and Chris aren't, you know, eye to eye, or, you know, like, oh, why, you know, how do they know this, you know, Rebecca character, and that sort of thing, and it adds a little bit more of, you know, substance
yeah.
to the characters themselves if you play the game. But I think, you know, what's really good, and most of the movies, I think, goes without saying, that you don't really need to know the games themselves very well in order to, you know, enjoy them.
With all these the games, the more that they've gone along, they sort of like become more sort of standalone from the game, so you didn't need to know a whole bunch of information. And I think the fact that they constantly use new villains rather than going, oh, here's Wesker.
Yeah.
It's like he somehow survived falling in a volcano. I thought that it was good that they were able to sort of mix it up in that way. So
we're gonna move on to Infinite Darkness, which rewinds back. I think it actually might rewind before a degeneration of anything.
I don't know if I would try and slot this in still. Yeah, I mean, for myself, I mean, I always thought that it was after 4.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter where it slots in. The main thing, I think, is that basically this happens after, you know, now we know that Leon is, it's after he saved the president's daughter, which you say is in Resident Evil 4.
That's in 4. According to Wikipedia, it's set between 4 and 5. And it's set in 2006, where Leon has been brought in to be part of a special task force after the White House is attacked by zombies. At the same time, he finds himself teaming up with the leader of the former Mad Dogs unit, who 6 years ago was declared the hero of Penistam when his team went in to save a crash unit that crashed in this city. So it's very Black Hawk Down. If you've seen Black Hawk Down, you've got a real great idea of where the setting is. But the series Infinite Darkness is kind of what would happen if you combine 24 with Resident Evil. The end result being this 4-part series that was released onto Netflix, in which you have this sort of like standalone story which brings back Leon. We get to see Claire again, with the pair this time investigating this conspiracy within the government where bioweapons may be being used to help spark a war with China. But yeah, I mean, what did you think of this one, Kim? I mean, obviously it's a 4-part series, but you can watch it as a 2-hour, well, less than 2 hours, really, because it's...
It's pretty on par to the movies themselves. I mean, the length of the movies themselves were mostly an hour 30 to hour 45 type of thing.
So it's about that, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, this one, actually, you know, you watch it and it feels like that. It's just that they cut it off in the scenes, which, you know, so it divides it a little bit better. I don't know. I would have, if it was, I like, you know, the main thing I always thought about is why didn't they just did it as a movie, like a, you know, hour 45, hour 50 movie or something like that, right?
I had no idea it was a series until I put it on. I thought it was just another film. So it was a real surprise to me to find like 4 episodes. So I was like, oh God, how long is this going to take?
Yeah, but it's not, you know, it's pretty easy to go through, which I do like. It also is divided really well because obviously the TV format and whatnot, it gives it that nice little division. I really like Infinite Darkness. Like, I really enjoy watching it. I don't have issues with what, you know, a lot of other people seem to have with it. And I don't really feel like Claire is... You know, Claire is a bit underused, but she's always underused in comparison to Leon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody likes to go. Everybody loves Leon a lot. He's such a...
clearly does when they're making these, because I just don't care for Leon.
Because it definitely feels like it, right? Because Leon is the centerpiece of every single film so far. I think one of the best things about this film is obviously you can really see the money that's put behind it, obviously, because you have Netflix backing it and whatnot. So you have this whole thing where there's the voice actors from, I believe, the remake, which is in with like the Resident 2 remake, which is actually voicing the characters here. And then, you know, obviously you have Ray Chase, who is a really good voice actor, playing Jason, and that's, you know, Jason is, you know, the Mad Dog unit leader. So the story, I think, really works because you're moving through, obviously, another government conspiracy. You're moving through bioweapons being used. A lot of the plot points are really similar to previous movies, but that is the center of Resident Evil in reality, right? Not all the crazy mutants running around in the live-action ones. But, you know, this one is really focused on building up from, you know, how it's really been evolving right now. They're even using these bioweapons in a way to kind of strengthen the army and whatnot. So you have this whole thing which is going on with Shenmei, which is one of the characters here. Who is teaming up with Jason, and they have their own little side mission or whatnot, and everybody has their own goals. So it's interesting because things are happening parallel to each other, and they navigate it pretty well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things in here. I mean, you obviously have that 24-hour style plot where you've got America trying to get a foothold into China, which is obviously, in this case, Pennamistan, which was obviously at the center of this whole crisis. And it's currently where Claire is off doing her care work because she's now an aid worker. And at the same time, you've got the shady defense secretary Wilson, who's determined to get into a war with China. Our main group here this time being Leon, the Mad Dogs unit leader Jason, and obviously Shenmei, who was also former military as well at the time. And we have this really fun sort of conspiracy going on. It's all like, well, what happened to the Mad Dogs unit, because all the former members have all committed suicide. At the same time, you've got this whole sort of like idea of like, well, where do Jason and Shenmei's loyalties lie? Because we have this great sequence on a submarine which sees the crew being attacked by zombie rats, which is still not the most stupidest thing that's ever turned up in a Resident Evil video game. Because, I mean, we look at the games and you've got things such as like the zombie elephant, the zombie birds, we've got zombie ivy and leeches. It seemed like so many things that they could turn into a zombie of those games they have. I mean, there's a zombie shark and a crocodile. And before we came on here, I was like trying to find out like what's the stupidest thing that's been in these games. And you remember, I mean, obviously we got like the skinless dogs, we got lickers, we got giant spiders. There's so many of these things that like you were in the first game, like giant snakes and stuff. And then it was sort of like, as the game's gone on, they've tried to top what came before it. So I think the zombie rats were certainly an interesting new addition to this. So,
no, I mean, that scene was done really well because you have this, you know, like it really created a lot of horror and suspense, I think, when you had that scene where, you know, Leon shows up and then there's like movement under the shirts and stuff and you can't really see what's going on. And then you have these rats that are just shooting out. And it's a pretty creepy scene.
It is, and it's surprising just like how violent some of these movies get. Really, from the second one, I want to say that they really start upping the violence level of these games, because the first one's a little restrained, and then the second one we get like a lot of head crushing. And then by the time you get into this one, it's sort of like you got rats spewing out of people's mouths and you got this, it just gets really kind of icky in places. So I was very pleasantly surprised by this. I think if this I watched this last year, it would have made probably one of my top, you know, series of the year. So who knows, by the end of this year maybe I'll make that top list for this year. So I have to say that Leon is like infinitely tougher than Claire. Claire gets like a slight knock and she's like unconscious for like a good portion of the final episode, where Leon gets like held across the room into like solid concrete and he just like dusts himself off. And this isn't the first time this has happened in these films, because he gets like full on thrown into a pillar in the second one and he's just like somehow fine.
This TV series, when you get to episode 4, I think that it really, like, once this whole subplot is revealed as to why Jason is doing this and you know, Shenmei's position and what's going on, and a little bit more on her background as to, you know, why this is so important to her. Then you kind of bring back into this whole, this whole big final moment where, oh, you know, who, you know, what Wilson's big plan is, and everyone's trying to do their own thing, and then it all ends up this underground lab, which is like, I don't know if it's supposed to be secret or not, but it feels like it's supposed to be a secret, but I don't know how, because right. It's so big. And then you just have this whole scene breakout where all of a sudden, you know, you have this big showdown with acid and stuff. And then you have, like, oh, Claire running around and trying to save herself. And you keep thinking about Leon and you're just like, Leon, come on, remember, Claire's over there. Chop, chop, you know?
It's just an excuse. It's sort of like you're waiting for the big tyrant moment, and it's sort of like one of these characters ends up turning into a big tyrant.
Yeah.
Which obviously leads, and I like the fact that it's the big acid pit at the end. I thought that was a nice touch, rather than just like, let's incinerate the lab again. So, yeah, I think I really enjoyed this one. I would love to see a follow up to it. I'd certainly go for another series of Infinite Darkness, especially because this one's so self contained, which is really unusual for a Netflix series, because we know how they love a cliffhanger.
That was one of the things I think that I really liked about it. But it does give you enough, like, space for it to grow. So, like, if they were to do another one, maybe now you would be thinking about how, because Claire and Leon in this one parted ways basically on different opinions, it would be nice to see them kind of come back together and kind of see maybe Leon has changed from where he is now to, you know, what Claire would be doing next, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, because obviously when you think about Leon and Claire, they're not back in Resident Evil 7 or 8. So if they were to, obviously this also backtracks into, you know, the past, you know, Resident Evil 4 after whatever. And you have a lot of space for them to grow, because obviously now I don't know if Netflix or whoever is trying to build these series on its own, in the sense that it doesn't attach as much to slotting into the video games as much, but I think it still works. I don't really think it's necessary to really feel like where this slots in, but at the same time, you know, for people who are gamers, I think that element might be pretty interesting, just to add more backstory to these people that you've been playing for
the last decade or so,
you know.
Yeah, the storyline at this point is just so convoluted. To try and follow who all these damn characters are, it's a bit of a pain in the ass. So
yeah,
I just want to see, where the hell is Jill Valentine in all this?
Jill Valentine is so underused all the time.
Yeah, she is sort of like such a highly rated character. Because I mean, like back in the day, she was sort of like one of these like standout sort of characters, and now we never seem to see Jill Valentine anymore. We always it's always like Leon, and we barely see Chris. I mean, obviously him being like one of the main characters of the first one. So, but it's a frustration. We never seem to see her, but what can you do?
Eventually, who knows, right?
So there you have it. There's our breakdown of all the movies and the series. They are all available on Netflix as of the time of recording, so you can go check them out there. And, you know, let us know what you think. And we obviously have Return to Raccoon City, which is going to be on the way, so no doubt we'll be looking at that at some point soon as well. But as it stands at the moment, there is obviously the Netflix live action series on the way. There is no reports of any more animated films, but I would not say that they're not going to come out, because they just tend to just turn up. But obviously we can look forward to seeing those. It's hopefully seeing more in the coming years. But until next time, thank you as always for listening. Thank you to my co-host Kim. If you haven't done already, please do check out our Facebook. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. You can check out our blog, which is moviesandteapodcast.wordpress.com, which has got our full archive of episodes. But until next time, thank you again for listening, and we'll be back very soon with another film. But until then, good night.